You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
April 21st, 2018, this is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the overcast, gloomy Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I encourage you to visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net. Be sure and click on Your Health Matters up at the top. I also invite you to visit Woolly'sBlog.blogspot.com and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com, where you may view links for today's program. I'm still having website issues. I had the schedule page up and running for the last few days. I just attempted to add another anti-fluoride video and ran into trouble again. I think I need a new host for my site. Anyway, visit the chat room for those links for today's program. And the chat room again is spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. The website of interest is fluoridegate.org. Welcome to the program, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you for having me on. We can discuss a lot of topics today, and I think your listeners will be interested in some of the developments.
I have been watching anti-fluoride videos all day long, and I'm just overwhelmed. I thought that I had the subject pretty well under my belt, but I think if you hear things repeated, then you get them better. You learn them better. And there's so many things that fluoride affects. Oh my gosh. I'm just sick.
You know, it's a poison. It's got, but you know, how many poisons you know have their own dozen lawyers? That's the so that's why people are confused about fluoride's effects on humans. Is that they it harms everything it comes in contact with? So the people that leak it everywhere have an army of lawyers to help muddy the pictures, if you will. And so that's the reason people think fluoride's good, is because they're being lied to by people that are leaking it or selling it or generating it or in some way or another, you know, might be liable if you could prove that their fluoride caused harm to you.
Right. And of course, the other thing, too, is that we've heard from so many so-called authority figures and agencies, government agencies, for decades, how fluoride was wonderful, that it would help your teeth, it would make them stronger, and yet the evidence doesn't add up. But so many people are indoctrinated to believe this, and of course the American Dental Association teaches it, the American Medical Association teaches it, the CDC teaches it, but the FDA has never approved of it.
Well, you know, you're actually outlining for your listeners exactly what the problem is. Is that you're correct. The ADA teaches it, but why does that make any difference? They're a trade association. It'd be like having the Teamsters teaching something, right? No.
Right.
They have managed to insert themselves between the government and the schooling system. And so if you have a dental school in your area, it is accredited by the American Dental Association. And like NYU, they looked at the evidence, and it was getting more and more obvious since about 1926 that mercury comes off of dental fillings, and that now is linked to a whole host of disorders. And so they were going to quit teaching the students to do mercury fillings. And the accrediting agency said that, well, we would have to remove your accreditation if you didn't teach mercury fillings. So they use their ability to accredit or not accredit schools to browbeat them into teaching dogma instead of science. And that's, therein lies the trouble. I mean, you wouldn't have an engineering school, for example, that was accredited by the American steel industry. You know, you'd find everything looked like an erector set. You know, everything's got to be steel, right? Because they've got a vested interest in that. And that's where the ADA comes in. They've got a vested interest in that. And that, and they were founded in 1859 by the dentist that got kicked out of the organization that wouldn't let them use mercury. So they are the mercury using dentists, and they will never change. It's like asking the Pope to become Jewish. He's not going to do it. They're never going to change that. They've got their course is set out in stone, and when I started this argument about the mercury, I went, contacted the ADA and I got all of the, wrote them for their evidence of safety and that sort of stuff. And I asked them about, environmental exposure and occupational exposure. And I got the story that you're exposed to more mercury from fish than you are from fillings. And that's not true. And we can prove it's not true now. They did an autopsy study in Los Angeles. And the controls were people that had 32 teeth with no fillings of any kind. Now, that's what's called a clean control. You know, they may have had a baby tooth with a filling, but the average age was like 35. So, 32 teeth with no fillings of any kind was the controls. They had extremely low levels of mercury in the brain. And then they had people with 1 to 60 surfaces of amalgam in their teeth. And the amount of mercury in your brain the day you die is proportional to the number of mercury fillings in your teeth the day you die. So it's not the fish, unless people with mercury fillings only eat fish. But anyway, Effley Bailey wrote a book called Never Plead Guilty. And what he says there is that you, as a lawyer, when you're defending something for someone for murder or whatever, you suggest an alternative, explanation. And that if your client doesn't plead guilty, and you come up with an alternative explanation, the jury, more likely than not, will let you off the hook. Well, they fell down the stairway and stabbed themselves in the back with a knife. That's what it was. And so that's all they're doing. And so if you stop them for a second when they're suggesting their alternative explanation and ask a few simple questions, I realize that's your belief, and what study do you have that showed that? Well, you must be a conspiracy theorist or something. No, I just want to know what study you have that you think is really compelling, showing that mercury from fillings is not causing problems. Well, we don't have any studies, but we've been doing it for 200 years. Well, in 200 years, Alzheimer's didn't exist 200 years ago. Cancer affected 6% of the population in 1900, and now it's 50%. Cardiovascular disease was not the reason people died in the 1800s and the early 1900s. It is now. So what evidence, and you can cut, there's a disease called idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy. IDCM is how you abbreviate it. And, there in Italy, Festari took, hearts that died of IDCM and they have mercury in them. 22,000 times more mercury in a heart that dies of IDCM than a heart that died of a heart attack. Well, you say, oh, that doesn't prove it's causal, it's just associated. On the other hand, if I took your heart and injected it with that much mercury, it would quit beating. So I think it's getting pretty close to causal. So, why wouldn't you want to look in their mouth? If somebody's dying of idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy, you'd want to look and see where the mercury's coming from, right?
Right.
But they don't do that. I was warning somebody American Academy of Environmental Medicine, speaking in St. Louis a number of years ago. And, mercury fillings are bad. taking them out carelessly is just as bad as putting them in carelessly.
Right.
And so I was warning my audience of physicians to be sure and follow the safe amalgam removal protocol of the IAMT and tell them how to get a hold of the dentist that would, you basically use the same technique that your painter should use when they're, you know, demoing an area that had lead paint on it. You know, you tape it off, you put vacuums and respirators and suck all that stuff up and put it in a hazmat bag and get rid of it. You don't feed it to the patient. Well, a lot of dentists, you know, leave junk in your mouth and they don't protect your nose at all. And so you end up with a huge dose of mercury. And so when I got done with my warning about, getting your amalgams and fillings removed, do get it done, but get it done carefully. And, the physician, cardiologist, next to me, reached over and said, "When you're done, Dr. Kennedy, I'd like the microphone." And I said, "Sure." And I finished my rant about doing it carefully and had it in the microscope and microphone. And he said to the audience, "Listen to him. He is telling you the truth." He said, "I didn't know this, and I had my mercury fillings removed, and within 2 weeks I developed IDCM. I would have been dead if I hadn't received a heart transplant." He said, "Be very careful." And he was 50 when that happened. So, you know, he never had any cardiovascular problem in his life, and he's a cardiologist. He knew that. And so he knew what caused his heart to go bad. So thank you very much. Now you've got somebody else's heart. But, if dentist would say, "Well, you know, it's cardiovascular disease, it's not our responsibility." And that's how they avoid being blamed for the damage that they're causing. They just say, "Oh, we're dentists. We don't know anything about anything else." Well, let's quit taking their word when they say, "Oh, it's proven safe." Right. So if it's a study done by a dentist, you got a study proven safe by somebody that doesn't know the difference between not safe and safe.
Right. And dentists really don't study other parts of the body. They don't study the toxicity of mercury or fluoride or anything like that. They don't read those studies.
Well, you know what? They do, but they're lied to. I had a course in mercury. It was part of the training, and what they told me was not true. They said that when I mixed the filling, I put the mercury, silver, copper, and zinc and tin together in a capsule and shook it up, and that when I mixed the filling, that the materials were momentarily plastic, so you could get them in the tooth. But once it set, that the mercury was locked in and no longer released. That's the story I heard in the 60s, the story they told in the 30s. It wasn't true in the 30s. It's not true today. Is that you can watch my smoking tooth video. Is you can visually see mercury coming off 25-year-old fillings anytime you touch them. If you scrape them with an explorer, or you hit them with a rubber cup, or you hit them with a toothbrush, or you put it in hot coffee, all of those make those terrible fillings leak mercury. And so what I would talk was untrue. So if I hadn't gone ahead and learned on my own that what I was telling my patients was malarkey, then I'd still be telling malarkey. And that's unfortunately where most dentists are yet today, is that they didn't break away from the dogma of the American Dental Association. And instead well, that's what I learned in school. Yes. And your school is accredited by a trade association. So that means that your school is teaching the students what the trade association wants it to teach, and it's not based in science. It's based in dogma. And that, so anyway, it's a crime ongoing in our time, and it's time for them to stop lying to the students. And I have a way to stop mercury filling use. People think, they're not using that anymore, are they? Yes, they are. And that they put in 50,000 pounds last year alone.
Oh my gosh.
Enough to poison every man, woman, and child in this country. And so, yes. But now who got them? I talked to you. You didn't get any, and I didn't get any, and nobody I know got any mercury fillings. Who got them? Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Public Health Service, Indian Service, welfare. So all of the people who can't afford to go outside the system stuck poison metal fillings in their teeth.
Wow. And there are dentists who can remove the mercury fillings safely. It's just a matter of finding them.
Absolutely, and I send everybody to the IMT website. They got a thing called SMART certification, which means that the dentist knows how to put a hose on your nose and keep you from inhaling the fumes. Then there's a stage after that, which is called accredited, which means you've actually taken some cases that you've done and presented it to your peers and shown that you know how to, you know, do this and support the patient and so forth. And so there are organizations working really hard to make sure that this procedure is done safely. But, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I like my dentist. We play golf. And that's a good reason to turn them on to the fact that they're not telling you the truth. Because if you like your dentist, that your there's a huge study by Tom Duplinski out of the University of Yale, studying dentists in Massachusetts, and he studied their use of drugs, and not illegal drugs, but prescription drugs, because it's covered under their Romney Care, and that the dentists are using many times more of the drugs for motor problems, shaking, tremor, epilepsy, and the motor problems, then they are paired social equal, which would be so if they're using several times more, they're also using several times more of the drugs for depression, schizophrenia, neurological disorders of the brain where you're insane. And so when you look at whether or not they're taking motor disorder and brain disorder, insanity kind of things, that the dentists are taking 18 times more of the drugs for insanity and
brain
disorders and motor disorders than their paired social equal. So when they say, oh, well, you know, there's a problem with what we notice in the dentist, well, take a good look. What you see is infertility, birth defects, offspring is damaged, and they're insane, and that they have motor disorders, and they're going to die probably at the age of the average person. But think about it. A dentist is not average. A dentist has a higher income earning, and that they have 8 years of education. And so if you go look for the paired social equal of the dentist is dying 8 years younger. So, yeah, we live as long as the homeless guy. Okay, cool. But, you know, if you lived as long as your paired social equal, you'd live 8 more years. So, anyway, I thank Tom Duplinski for that excellent study because it basically nailed it.
Wow. Now, what is the name of the website again? The ITM?
I'll spell it out like a pilot. I is in India, A is in Alpha, O is in Oscar, M is in Mike, and T is in Tango, IAOMT.
Stands
for International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.
Okay. Great. Oh, my goodness.
It does get complicated, doesn't it? Anyway, it's still doable. The getting the mercury fillings out is the first step on getting well. You know, and then go find all your root canal teeth and get rid of those. The people.
Oh, like that's another bad thing.
It's dead. I mean, you know, grandma was dead. Would you have her stuffed and put her by the fireplace? No.
Right.
That's not what you do with dead things.
Right. There was another dentist I had on that talked about root canals and how terrible they are. So many people have them.
Nice titanium implant.
Right. Okay, we do have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. The website of interest is fluoridegate.org. You were in so many of the movies that I, or the videos that I watched today.
I get around.
You do. You really get around. And the gentleman that I was referring to about the root canals was Dr. Hal Huggins. I believe he's passed away.
He did pass away, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he was all the time bugging, my friend Boyd Haley to start measuring root canals for him. And Boyd finally did, and he ended up showing that they're hugely toxic. And that's Hal Huggins. He managed to, but he was basically relying heavily on the work of Weston Price. And, so on my YouTube channel, I have a nice segment of Hal Huggins talking at the Weston Price and Pottinger Foundation here in Lemon Grove. So that, Dr. Price figured it out, and Hal Huggins talking about it. So it's fun to do.
Yes. And I love Boyd Haley. He's
Boyd's a genius. And you know, yes. Nobody gives him credit for being the great guy he is, but I do.
He's terrific.
I learned more chemistry from Boyd than I did from my undergraduate degree. He just understands the way molecules think.
Yes. Yes. I've interviewed him too. Some time back. We're talking about vaccines.
He's really down on injecting babies with mercury on the day they're born. And
yes. Hello?
The people doing it aren't. It's like, well, Ted Bundy never admitted he killed anybody. So, why do you ask them? They're the culprits. It's like asking Ted, did you kill anybody today? No. Everybody's fine.
Gosh. And as you pointed out, the AMA and the ADA are trade unions. They are there to protect the people who belong to them.
The ADA was dismissed from a lawsuit by Hank Tolhurst in 1994. He sued them because he got mercury poisoned and diagnosed by Stanford. Yes, not a weak school. They were able to identify mercury as the culprit in Dr. Duplinski's injury. And what did they do about it? And the ADA argued that they owe no duty of care to the public because they are a trade association and they do not regulate dentistry. And they don't approve dental material. And the approval is for packaging impurity, and it's got nothing to do with safety. And so they said, and so, yet whenever there's an article that comes out, they immediately run and ask them, well, how do you think of this safe? Oh, we're very confident in the safety of this material, blah, blah, blah. Out of the one side of the mouth, they say they're not responsible. Out of the other side, they're very confident. So I have a little trouble with that attitude. I'm from Kansas. I don't like
what yeah. Well, also the FDA really does not. It's a swinging door. It's a revolving door, and you have people in the industry who move into that field and then go back and forth, and they really the people who approve these things don't do any testing. They just take the word of the people of the companies, and they just get paid to approve things. Just as the government representatives, senators, congressmen, they take money from these trade unions, and it pays off for them. So everybody's getting rich. Well, the population is getting sicker and sicker and wondering why.
I got news for them. I know why.
Yes.
stuff is approved that ain't good for you. And then, and you know, it's like mercury. They approved it, but the lady sat on the board of directors of Shine who sell.
Right. Right.
Can you say conflict of interest?
Yes. Alrighty. We're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Alrighty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. The website is fluoridegate.org. He also has a YouTube channel. And so what we need to do if we have mercury fillings is to find a dentist by going to the website that you indicated, iaomt.org, and finding one in our area that can do that safely. Would you recommend somebody in the chat room ask a question? He said that his last he says, I still have two massive mercury fillings in my only two good chewing teeth. I would love to know what the guest would recommend for me. Do I have my last two chewing teeth removed and go onto a liquid diet, or have two full crowns? The problem, I feel, is that the teeth are in pretty bad shape and may not handle a crown too well. Plus, I really need dentures to eat properly anyway. He's just been putting it off. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I got news for him, but dentures aren't going to eat any better than teeth. And even a few teeth will eat better than most dentures. So, but, you know, you need to salvage it. If the tooth is alive, salvage it. There are several ways to fix badly broken down teeth. The Navy used to use gobs of mercury. And so a lot of people that were in the Navy, Army, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Public Health Service ended up with a mouthful of really, really big mercury fillings. I could have put them in. I was in the Navy. And, but that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the tooth. It just means that the tooth has a big chunk of mercury in it. So what I recommend is you get somebody that's got good eyesight and good dental skills who comes in with the magic wand and protects your airway and makes the mercury filling jump out. And then you look at the tooth. Is it still alive? If it's alive, then you can either, a crown surrounds the tooth. Almost any kind of tooth can have a crown. I don't care how badly broken down it is. That we did crowns on teeth that were severely damaged and they stayed on. It's a question of making the walls parallel and it's a skill. It's not something that happens by accident, but people that are good at it will be good at it. So find a good dentist and get rid of the mercury and get those teeth crowned. Now, you're missing some other teeth, I take it, because you don't have a way to chew. So what you can do with those crowns is when you make them, you can actually put a notch or a slot in it so that that crown now fits perfectly, like a key in a lock, with a removable partial denture. So people don't, you know, it's not very common because dentists have forgotten how to make inexpensive removable appliances. But basically, with a removable appliance, you replace the missing teeth and then you clasp, or like I mentioned with the crown, through a slot on the crown, you attach to the remaining natural teeth. Well, you know, if you got enough natural teeth, you're eating as good as you ever did. It's you know, the teeth are a great support for the whole process of chewing. But you don't need 32 teeth to chew up something. You need, you know, 8 or 10. So keep them. You know, it's like a war. You know, you lose a few soldiers in a war every time. But you can win the war. You just take care of the live soldiers. And that's in your mouth. You've got some dead soldiers and some live soldiers. Get rid of the dead ones and save the live ones. And I say never get rid of a soldier that's still alive and somebody says it's too hard to fix. Well, no, get a better dentist. All these things are fixable. There's nothing that's too hard to fix. It's just if it's dead, it's too hard to fix because, you know, unless you got your dentist has the Lazarus wand to make it jump back alive, but that doesn't happen. So in my experience, and They can go all they want to about how we're going to do someday, but right now it doesn't happen. So anyway, that a good question. Crown is the solution, but make sure the mercury's out from underneath it. About 70% of the teeth that had crowns on them, that when I removed the old crown, that there was mercury underneath it. So,
Oh my goodness!
You know, it's a crime ongoing in our time. It's just the dentists don't believe that mercury's a problem. So if you came in and said, "I'd like to get all my mercury out," they'll cover it over for you and not tell you. I had a friend of mine who's a dentist up in Santa Barbara, and he had a patient that started getting his mercury fillings removed, and then, you know, his job changed and he ended up, you know, moving to the other side of the country. And anyway, he ended up with a, stop by, let me get rid of the dog here.
Sounds like a shepherd.
She gets excited.
Oh, she sounds like a shepherd. Is she a German shepherd?
No, she's a giant Jack Russell.
Oh.
And she's really pretty,
she's
too.
Big. Yeah.
There's nobody can come anywhere near the house and she doesn't start talking about them. So that's
good.
That's a good watchdog.
Yeah.
But it's still, but anyway, I was waxing poetic about issues of dentists not knowing how to remove mercury fillings safely, and there's lots of ways to fix teeth. If you carefully remove fillings and then look at what's left of the tooth, you can put it back together. And in my book, I talked about there's half a dozen ways to put a tooth back together. If I'm the first dentist to ever see a cavity in a tooth and it's the size of a pinhead, you can come in with a laser or an airbrush or sandblaster or even a small slow-moving burr without anesthesia. Just get that little rotten spot out of that enamel, clean off the enamel, and then flow a good kind of plastic, not the kind that leaks like water bottles, but, you know, the kind that becomes hard and doesn't leak obnoxious fluoride, into that hole and over the biting surface of the tooth where there's a groove or a flaw. And that'll be there for, you know, the rest of their life. It's a perfect way to fix a cavity. And, you know, and so when you hear your dentist saying, oh, the mercury is such a much better way. No, it's not. It gets bigger. You know how the mercury goes up in the summer and down in the winter in the thermometer?
Right.
That behavior doesn't go away. It's chemistry. It's not going to go away. So the filling in the tooth gets bigger when you get it, hot, and it gets smaller when you get it cold. So every tooth that has a mercury filling for any length of time has cracks in it. You need a crown. You're going to crack in your tooth. Well, how'd that crack get there? Well, I put a mercury filling in there and it cracked the tooth. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. Well, what if I don't want to put a crown on the tooth and it's got little cracks in it that were pieces I haven't actually started to move? Well, then we can make a composite inlay or onlay to cover over the cracked area, or we can put an inlay right inside the tooth and glue the whole thing together. Oh, well, that sounds better. Let's glue it together. And I glued thousands of teeth together, and it sometimes they'd break, but not very often. It saved a bajillion dollars. So less is best. I encourage everybody to do the minimum amount of dentistry that gets their mouth in good shape. And, you know, they kill all the bugs, get rid of the gum infection that you probably caught from your mother, and you'll have your teeth the rest of your life. People are 66% of the teeth that are lost in adults are lost because of gum disease. Well, what's gum disease? It's a bug. Lives in your gums, and there's lots of other factors, such as how well you're nourished or whether you smoke, and that's how well you brush your teeth, for one thing. But it's basically a bug. And so you can go after that bug with topical agents that kill bugs, like iodine or ozone. You don't have to use, and fluoride doesn't kill it. Actually, fluoride ruins bone. So there's a study in the literature where a dentist tried to flush the bad bugs out of the gums with irrigation, which is a very good way thing to do. But instead of using iodine or ozone, the agents that I recommend, they use fluoride because they're big believers in fluoride, and the jawbone sloughed. It kills the jawbone. So, you know, don't do that. It's poison. Don't be flushing your gums out with poison. It's not logical. So you need to flush them out with something that kills germs, but not people. And that would be something like oxygen, because you can breathe oxygen and it won't hurt you. And you can iodine. You need iodine. Everybody needs iodine every day. So you can use agents that are good for you that will do just exactly what you want them to do. Knock off the bad bugs. And that's
right.
What I encourage people to do. That's one of my videos, actually, bad bugs.
Now, you once recommended to put iodine in your water pick, which I thought was a very good idea.
I do.
Right?
It's in the bad bugs.
Right.
That's one of the ingredients. And, you know, because if you accidentally swallow some of that, not the bovidin, but the glucose, it's good for you.
Right, right. It's not going to ruin your jaw or anything.
You don't have to write this on the side of the toothpaste tube. Keep out of reach of children. The kids are supposed to brush their teeth, but they're supposed to keep it out of their reach. How's that going to work out?
Oh, gosh. And so many children get sick from swallowing just a dab of toothpaste.
10,000 a year was the calls to the Poison Control Center before 1997 when they put the warning on. They had year after year after year, 10,000 parents would take the child to the emergency room or to the Poison Control Center or something like that because they got sick on toothpaste.
And that's only the people that reported the problem.
Yeah, that's the ones that knew what made the kid sick.
Right. So many things happen that never get reported because people don't know that they can report something.
Or the doctor doesn't know what caused it. You know,
right.
You have a lot of diseases that are called idiopathic.
Right.
Multiple sclerosis is idiopathic. And that means an idiot can't figure out the pathology. So, idiopathic, we don't know what causes it.
Huh. Okay. So mercury, we've covered that topic pretty well. Just get rid of it. Use a good dentist to do that. Let's talk about fluoride. As I mentioned, I've been watching fluoride videos all morning and just was so upset. And I plan after the program today, I'm going to finish watching the rest of the ones that I have lined up. There's so many things, diseases and problems that people have. The hypothyroidism is just a really big issue in this country. So many people have it. They have chronic fatigue syndrome and all kinds of other things. And where does all this come from?
Well, this is one of the most fluoridated countries in the world. Ireland is second. And then we got Australia. And you know the similarity, all the three of those countries? They speak English. Canada used to be right up there with us. And then in the last 10 years, it's reduced the amount of fluoridation by more than 50%. And that's because the people went to the city councils and they said, we don't think this is a good idea. And here is the science. And this council's listened. I've been to the city councils here in San Diego, and, you know, I get invited to lecture around the world. I'm hosted by governments in other countries. But in my own hometown, I'm an idiot because they
Amazing.
Know so much better. It's recommended by the trade associations. So, anyway.
A prophet in your own country, right?
Yeah, that's it. But city councils tend to go with the recommendation of the United States government. And they say, well, it's recommended. And so, you know, but you can't get those recommending it to sit down and discuss it scientifically. They say, oh, that would give those terrible anti-fluoridationists, those conspiracy theorists, a podium where they could spew their rhetoric. And so we won't discuss it. Well, wait a minute. You want to medicate the entire population of this country with raw untreated hazardous waste from the phosphate fertilizer mining industry of China, Mexico, Japan, and Florida, and you don't want to discuss what's in the ingredients to the chemicals you're adding to the water supply. Have you got something to hide, perhaps? You know, we could discuss the content and the chemical and the chemical analysis of the product you're putting in the water and how it might not be safe for a baby. Can we discuss that? Nope, we can't discuss that. And it, I gave my poison baby talk. It's one of my little videos, at the city council. And then, Scott Peters, who is now a congressman, asked the question. He said, well, you know, we've got an army of doctors here. What is this about the infant being overdosed with fluoride from the drinking water? And I volunteered to explain it to him. And he said, no, I've heard it from you. I want to hear from this army of doctors. Scripps, Salk, the California Dental Association, the Rady's Children Hospital. And just an army of doctors were there telling him it was a good idea to put fluoride in the water. And so all those doctors knew that what I said was absolutely correct. An infant on a bottle drinking fluoridated tap water receives a dose well above the level that's known to harm their thyroid. And I can do the math for you, but there's no sense in going through that. They won't go through it. And so what happened at the, I did it on my little video. What happened is that that army of doctors he was talking about shoved the lobbyist up, Mr. Pollack. And Mr. Pollack, a 2-year degree in dentistry, so he's not a doctor, but he's made over $1 million promoting fluoridation in California here. So Mr. Pollack went up, and he knows that if he lies, we're going to file a claim against him. And so he gets up, and he says, oh, well, you know, babies drink a lot of water, and that the breast milk is the best food for a baby, and they should be breastfed. And if you're going to feed a baby, then you can use the ready-to-feed formula, yada, yada, yada. And he didn't explain why he recommended those, but then he finally got down to, but if you're going to reconstitute powdered formula, you should use distilled water. Okay. Distilled water has no fluoride in it. So he's saying the powdered formula should be mixed with something that doesn't have fluoride as opposed to the tap water, which the city council was at that point deciding to add fluoride to. And that, so he admitted that, you know, that would be too much fluoride for the baby. And then the city council voted to add silico fluoride to the water supplies of San Diego so that babies in San Diego will be exposed to too much fluoride. And it's caused a skyrocketing of the lead problem in San Diego. Silico fluoride sucks lead out of the water lines.
Right, so right.
We've all of a sudden had lead problems. We've been in the city here for 150 years, and now we've suddenly cropped up with a rash of lead problems. Oh, my God, where could that be coming from? Well, there's a patent in the U.S. Patent Office for silico fluoride. The product they're adding to our water supply is a chelating agent for lead. It takes it out of the solder and takes it into the child.
Let's pick that up on the other side of this break. Be right back. All righty, welcome back. Our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy, the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He has a YouTube channel. Be sure and look at some of his great videos. And you also want to visit fluoridegate.org. Right before we went to the break, you said that fluoride pulls the lead out of lead pipes. And, of course, I automatically thought of Flint, Michigan, and I'm sure it's happening in other places also.
Well, Flint, Michigan is kind of interesting because they were adding silico fluoride to the water supply, but because when you put acid in the water, then you have to add a base to neutralize it, so they usually use something like Drano, and that's expensive. So what they did in Flint is that they continued to add the acid, but they quit adding the base. And so when they talk out of both sides of their mouth saying, well, you know, the water was too acid, it's acid because you were adding acid. Well, yeah, that made the lead leach out. Well, the chemical you were adding wasn't fluoride. It was hydrofluosilicic acid. And the name tells you what it is. It's a piece of sand with 6 fluoride molecules around it. So that's not fluoride. That's a man-made element that, or compound that has never existed without the phosphate fertilizer industry making it. So it's patented to extract lead from rats. There are two huge studies of humans showing that the blood level of lead doubles if you put silicon fluoride in the water supply. And justify that. Even if you thought cavities was the biggest thing in the world, and it's not, even if you thought that, how can you lower the child's IQ by 5 points? That's what that lead does. Is when you pop that lead up, you're going to harm that child, not for a week or a month, for a lifetime. That you can't get that IQ back. They've tried. And so the only way to prevent that harm is to stop causing it. And yet we get government agents who are paid to promote fluoridation refuse to address the science. They say, well, my job is to promote fluoridation. I'm not supposed to make these scientific decisions. Oh, okay. So we've got an army of drones out there that have dental degrees or medical degrees that don't have any brains attached to them, and that they want to earn their government salary, and they want to go around and tell us what they learned in school, which has been proven to be false. But that's what they're doing. That's the story that's going. There's a program in the United States because malnutrition in infants was identified as a serious problem a number of years ago, that they set up a program called WIC, Women, Infant, and Children, and it's a program where educators, nutritionists, will teach the mother how to feed the baby and feed the baby well so that the baby ends up being a productive member of our society and able to accomplish great things in school. And so one of the things that you might want to ask, do they warn the mother, as the lobbyists did, that feeding a baby with fluoridated tap water will harm that baby? WIC will not tell the mothers not to use tap water.
Oh, my gosh. All righty. We're at the top of the hour. Can you believe it? We'll be right back after a short break.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Tara, and our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth: Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. He has a YouTube channel, and he's featured in a lot of videos about fluoride. As he said, he really does get around. And thank goodness for people like him. You'll want to visit the website, fluoridegate.org, and also find a good dentist who can remove mercury fillings. And you can do that at the website iaomt.org. And we were talking about, well, babies and the WIC who, where they did not tell the mothers not to give their children, their babies, tap water or fluoridated water. This is just an awful, awful thing. Let me just ask a quick question from the chat room. What can be done for extreme sensitivity in your teeth? This gentleman said that he went to the dentist and had a cleaning, and it left his teeth very, very, well, in agony, he says. So what may have happened there?
is because there are likely, and I'm just guessing on the telephone as opposed to looking in the mouth, but from my experience, that likely there's an ongoing process in the gums that's called periodontal disease or gum inflammation, gingivitis, periodontitis. It's got a lot of names. It's the reason most people lose their teeth, and that's why he had his teeth cleaned. And in the process of the gums healing up, they're now shorter because the bone is shorter. So now there is an area of tooth that used to be embedded in bone. You know how if you cut your finger and you lose the skin, it's real sensitive? Well, the same thing's true of your tooth. Is that if you lose the bone around your tooth, so that now there's a collar of tooth sticking out of the gum that is now exposed to the hot and cold and all that stuff, it's sensitive. That is a serious problem for two reasons. One is that you need to figure out what made the bone go away, because what happens is it continues to go away and the tooth gets loosened and you lose your tooth. And two, it, like he said, he's in agony. So there are ways that you can decontaminate teeth, disinfect them. Ozone's a particularly good thing. I had a lady one time that had invented her own technique with a blunt toothpick, a wooden toothpick, and she would take olive oil, heat it in the frying pan, so she said just heat it to the point where it gets a little bit sticky, and then she takes it and rubs it 360 degrees all the way around each and every tooth. She takes that tooth, and she pointed out that when the olive oil is worn off, that the little wooden stick rubbing around the gum of the tooth, it squeaks, and she calls that squeaky clean. And when she showed me her mouth, there were no germs in there. It was perfect. But she was able to, she said, get rid of the sensitivity by simply rubbing the tooth with a little bit of olive oil and a wooden toothpick until it squeaked. Did that every day, and very shortly the inflammation in the tooth goes away and the tooth is no longer sensitive. So that there are techniques for getting rid of sensitive teeth that a lot of people recommend. Fluoride, it's somewhat sensitive because it's a deadly poison, but you can use things that aren't deadly poisons that do exactly the same job. So just say no to poisons. You know, there's the dentists like to lie, and they come up with things that, oh, you know, this guy in 1520 in Paracelsus said that everything's a poison, and it's the dose that makes them so. So, you know, that you can kill somebody with water, so water's a poison. But you know, it's the dose of water that, you know, that's important, and that's not true. If you go to the definition of a poison, it's a tiny amount of substance causes a remarkable effect. In that case, fluoride and mercury are deadly poisons. A tiny amount of mercury will cause a deadly effect. Microgram amounts, tiny amounts, and that you can drink a gallon of water and it won't kill you. So water's not a poison. So they're just making stuff up to make their favorite, their love of poisons appear more normal. It's not normal. Is that the dentists do not have any training in toxicology. There is not one toxicologist teaching in a dental school in the United States. So when your dentist tells you they've had a course in toxicology, ask them where they took it. Because they didn't take it in school. And that's a problem. Because if you've got dentists, and especially orthopedic surgeons, or there's a nice new article just came out on the clips that they use for tubal ligation, is that some of the clips contain titanium. And that's apparently causing inflammation all throughout the abdomen, and that's also what happens with the titanium implants in the jawbone, that they end up with inflammation around them and things are lost. So titanium is not a nice metal. The bone grows around it so that you can put a titanium screw in the jawbone and it stays. Great. But does the gum seal up to it so the germs don't get in your body? Nope. The germs get in. So you have a nice wound there. But there are lots of things you can do to make teeth less sensitive. One of them is meticulous hygiene. And like I was talking about with the electric toothbrush, and that there are desensitizing toothpaste with and without fluoride. You don't have to use the poisonous kind. And so that's my story on sensitive teeth, and that they often indicate there's something else going on. is that why is that area of the root now exposed when it wasn't exposed before? Well, when you were 12 years old, that root was buried in bone. And you're not 12 anymore. So where did the bone go? It went down, down, down. If I put a mercury filling in a tooth, the scientific study showed that that tooth will lose a millimeter of bone where that filling touches the gum in the next 12 months. So when they go around, oh, well, you've lost bone around your teeth. Well, look, see if there's a mercury filling in the tooth, because that's one of the common reasons for people to lose bone around teeth, is they got mercury fillings in the teeth. We did an experiment with sheep where we put mercury fillings in sheep. We try not to use humans as our guinea pigs, because it's one thing to use an animal. I mean, it's another thing to use a person. And so experimenting on animals, we were able to show that when you put a mercury filling in a sheep's tooth or a monkey's tooth, the jawbone around that tooth becomes saturated with mercury in the space of 6 weeks. It wasn't 30 days in the sheep. It's not a long experiment. So when the dentist say, oh, I don't believe that, well, you know, okay, why don't you go put mercury fillings in something and we'll measure you. But it's been shown by autopsy in humans and by scientific experiments in both primates and sheep. So they may not believe it, but their belief is like a religion, you know, that they believe in mercury. They believe in fluoride. They believe in this. They believe in that. But ask them for some evidence, scientific evidence, that putting fluoride in drinking water is good for the population. And they fail. They say what's recommended. Wait a minute. No, I didn't ask who's recommending it. I know who's recommending it. I asked, where's the evidence that putting silico fluoride in the public water supply, or you could put it in a rat. You know, it's not that hard to do. You can take a few thousand rats and put it in their water supply. And, you know, they actually did. And this was a retrospective study where they went and they looked at the control animals on them, over 1,000 studies, and they looked and see what the water supply was for the control animal. And these are animals that are supposedly not being exposed to any noxious agents. And that if the rat had distilled water in its cage for it to drink, that it had less cancer and it had less neurological diseases and on, just almost everything they could look at on the whole litany of things, than the rat that had fluoridated tap water as its drinking water. So that when the water people tell you that, oh, our water is fine, that you question that. Is your water, are all the elements in your water at the MCLG, the level that's safe for a lifetime? Right now, today, the level that's legal as the goal, the MCLG is the goal that supposedly you can drink this water for a lifetime and experience no adverse effects. The MCLG for fluoride is at 4 parts per million, which cripples people in China. As if you watch my documentary on China's battle with crippling water, I concluded pointing out that the level that crippled the people in China is the level that is supposedly good for you in the United States.
Yes, so, terrible.
Somebody's not telling the truth on this, would you think?
Right, absolutely. Now, in one of the videos that I watched, they showed newspapers from the 30s and 40s that demonstrated that fluoride was used as a rat poison, and that there were a lot of people who were inadvertently poisoned by ingesting it in their food accidentally. And so this was widely known, that fluoride was a rat poison. And yet, a decade later, they're promoting it for health. They've just flipped and just are now saying that it's healthy. And it's because of all of the surplus. And I was amazed at how much fluoride is put into local water supplies. We're not talking about a barrel. We're talking about thousands of barrels. And
we're talking 500,000 tons a year. Half a million tons.
Wow.
And how many trucks would we have to line up to haul that across the United States? Half a million tons. And that's just the United States. But we're importing it from China, Mexico, Japan, Belgium. Why don't those countries put it in their water? It's not legal. Oh, I see. So other countries in the world have determined it's not a good thing, and we're buying their leftover hazardous waste. I see. Well, where does silicon fluoride come from? It comes from making nuclear weapons.
Right.
So does our buying China's silicon fluoride help them make more nuclear weapons?
I was interested, too, in the connection to the Manhattan Project, talking about weapons and how fluoride was used in the Manhattan Project, in the bomb-making.
It had a secret name, element T, letter T. And that was, they didn't want the other side to figure out how to concentrate uranium. And it was top secret at the time that you make uranium hexafluoride. You take the uranium 235 and 236 and you spin them. That's why they're always after the centrifuges. Because 235 is a little bit lighter than 238. And the 235 is the one that blows up. So they have to make it uranium hexafluoride and then separate the uranium that blows up from the uranium that doesn't blow up. And when they get the kind that does blow up, it's called yellow cake. And that was, you perhaps remember they were running all over Africa looking for the yellow cake.
Right.
That's what happens when they're starting to concentrate uranium. But you're right. The whole push to fluoridate came from the Manhattan Project. And that in my opinion, the evil of the Manhattan Project was orchestrated by Harold Hodge. And I will tell you a little bit about Harold. Professor at Harvard. He was the chief toxicologist on the Manhattan Project. There's a book about some of his activities called The Plutonium Files. And that there's another book about some of his activities called The Fluoride Deception. But The Plutonium Files goes through in some detail, the murder of 18 Americans during peacetime with injections of plutonium, uranium, thorium. Plutonium Files was 18 people got plutonium. In all, 48 people were injected with plutonium, uranium, thorium, radioactive lead. There were 6 groups for plutonium and just 1 for the uranium. And one lady, Mary Connell, was injected with 185 micrograms of bomb-grade uranium, the kind that blows up. She should have died. She didn't. God reached out and he said, sorry about this, Mary, but you're going to live. And that because she was alive 50 years after she was poisoned, that she was continually suffering from kidney failure, kidney problems, kidney issues. And that's because that's where the uranium accumulated. She went to her physician and he said, well, let's do this little radioactive test and see if there's something wrong with your kidney. And they did the little radioactive test, and she was still so hot 50 years later that she fogged the film. There was radiation all over her body. And physician said, well, you know, where'd you get all this radiation? She said, I don't know, but I've been sick since November of 1946. And he said, how do you know that? She said, I weighed 80 pounds, and I went to see my doctor about, you know, because big was beautiful, and I went to see my doctor about putting on some weight, and he checked me into the metabolic ward at the Strong Memorial Hospital in Rochester, New York. And that she said, I wasn't there for 3 days, and then somebody came in and injected me with something, and I've been sick ever since. Read the plutonium files. They even got pictures of the syringe. They wore leather rubber gloves that had impregnated with lead so that they could actually take a hold of this metal syringe so they could inject innocent civilians with lethal doses of plutonium, uranium, thorium, radioactive lead. They were doing that at a civilian hospital. Well, why did I say Harold Hodge? Well, if you wanted to get a microgram or two of bomb-grade uranium, you, in 1946, there's only one place on the planet you could get that, and that would be at the Manhattan Project. And in the basement of the Strong Memorial Hospital was Harold Hodge's office. And it was his urging that they built the metabolic ward. And what he did is he screened all the people that checked in the metabolic ward. And if they had really good kidney function, really good liver function, then he picked them for murder with various elements that they were generating at the Manhattan Project to see which one killed them. And that, and this is an excellent book. I have in my library a copy from the U.S. Army Library, and that it was never checked out. There's not one name on the card for the U.S. Army Library book, but I kept it in my library. I bought a bunch of them. But Eileen Wilson was a cub reporter at the Albuquerque Tribune, and she read that they were going to come in and try to clean up the dump at the Los Alamos plant because there were animal carcasses in the dump that were radioactive. And she said, she thought to herself that, oh, they've dropped a bomb on the deer, and then they've killed a bunch of animals out there in the wild, and then they've put them in the dump. And so they're going to clean them up. And so she sent a Freedom of Information Act and asked them about the animals. And they weren't wild animals. They were laboratory animals, beagle dogs, rats, mice. All sorts of testing was done on radiation on animals at Los Alamos. And that she was reading, as a good reporter does, she was reading through all the piles of information she got. And that as she was reading through this, she said, the rat study with plutonium agreed with the results we got from the human Cal-1. Well, give me the information about the human Cal-1. And they said, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Being the good reporter that she is, she managed to figure out that not only is there a Cal-1, there was a Cal-2 and a Cal-3, and it stood for California, Stanford, first, second, and third person they attempted to murder with plutonium. And she identified 16 of the 18 people we know were killed with plutonium. And then Hazel O'Leary, Bill Clinton's energy czar, which is the now head of the Manhattan Project, they call it the Atomic Energy Commission, then they call it the Energy Department, apologized to Mary Connell, because Mary Connell was the only survivor, and she apologized to the families of those 16 people that had been murdered with plutonium.
Well, that was big of her.
That was nice. And she said, sorry about that. My bad. And that the reporter rushed up to Mary Connell at the end of the ceremony and said, well, does that make you, I think they gave her a new trailer house. Does that make you happy now? Are you pleased? And she said, well, you know, there were only 16 families here, and we know that there were 47 other families where people were killed. So they're not through saying they're sorry. And, but they haven't said a word since 1995, so you might ask the new people if they're going to continue their apology.
Right. All righty, we are going to a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we're talking with our guest today, Dr. David Kennedy, about, oh, so many things, fluoride and mercury and murder by governments, and this is just overwhelming. So please pick up where you left off. I've got to find that book, The Plutonium Files.
Plutonium Files, and the lady that wrote it is, her name is spelled like Welcome with an F. W-E-L-S-O-M-E, Welcome. And, my hat's off to, I don't know how you'd ever, if the government secretly injected 18 people with plutonium, and this is 1946, these are not military people, they did that too, but this is about the civilians that they did this to. And they, these are the same people promoting fluoridation. And that, you know, yes, I'm smearing them with their past deeds, but if you're going to rely upon a mass murderer for your advice, then you're entitled to make a mistake, because the mass murderer is going to lie to you. And that we've been lied to by Harold Hodge, the, person that I think is implicated, but you know, he's dead. So how can you prosecute somebody for murder who's passed away? You just
right.
And so the crime was covered up with top secret. They used top secret to cover up this crime for more than 50 years. In that time, the people that were murdered died. The people who, their relatives, most of them passed away. And so by the time it actually was revealed, most of these people were already out of the picture. So there's no really any real person you can come back and hang the rope around their neck. But the person that I think that, is a good candidate for that would be the chief toxicologist on the Manhattan Project. And partly because of the memos that he wrote during the war about, you know, there was a schoolhouse that was being blasted with the silicon fluoride, uranium hexafluoride leaking out of the deepwater New Jersey plant. And this is in not a urban area, but it's not a real rural area either. The schoolhouse is on the edge of the property. And that it's getting blasted with the crap coming out of the nuclear plant where they're trying to make a nuclear bomb during World War II. And to their credit, you know, this is a war. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And so they went and pointed out to Dr. Hodge that, you know, that the playground equipment had all turned into a rusted hulk in a year. And that the windows on the school were opaque because fluoride eats glass.
Right.
So obviously this school is in a stream of effluent coming from that nuclear processing plant in Deepwater, New Jersey at a high rate. And so he writes back, he said, should we send toxicologists to allay the parents' fears of fluoride and perhaps explain that it's good for their teeth? And he didn't even have the lie explained yet. It's good for their teeth, and their playground equipment's rusting away. Why don't we say, look, there's a nice building over here about 2 miles north, so that's out of the wind, we're downwind, and we can move the school over there. No, he wasn't concerned about moving the school over there. He was concerned about deceiving the parents so that they wouldn't raise an alarm. And I think if that's the way you think in 1943, you're probably thinking that way in 45, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
So that's his memos. So his memos are now no longer top secret. But there is a study that he, when the concentrating equipment blew out, it blew a bunch of uranium hexafluoride over three workers. And they called him in Washington, D.C., where he worked, and he raced out of there to go down to see where the injury occurred, and he pulled in and late at night, and that the workers were still in the dispensary, and one guy was in a coma, one guy was walking around jabbering, and then the other guy was there but in a stupor, I think is what he said. And he looks at him and he said, well, I think it's the element T. That was the secret word for fluoride. And that, and he wrote in the middle of World War II, he needed a grant to test the neurotoxicity, the brain damaging effect of the element T. And his grant was granted in one day.
Oh my gosh.
And
alrighty. We'll pick this up on the other side of our break. And, well, we're talking about a lot of really interesting things, amazing information. Let me just ask a quick question from the chat room. Are zirconia crowns better than porcelain crowns?
Porcelain is fairly fragile, so zirconia is going to be stronger. There are a lot of different crowns on the market, and I haven't practiced for, you know, almost 18 years. So my goal, is to put a mouth back together with no metal. If I can avoid using, gold or steel or nickel or titanium and mercury and copper and zinc and tin, all those things get you in trouble. And so, when you look at your mouth, it wasn't put together with heavy metals. You know, you don't look like the James Bond's nemesis in Jaws, but the enamel is actually a metal. It's calcium hydroxyapatite. Calcium's a metal, but it's not a heavy metal. It's not, you know, and so you try to put the metals back together as naturally as you can. The trouble with the porcelains is they're not very strong. So you end up having to remove tooth in order to make the porcelain or the zirconia thick enough. And that the more you do that, the more teeth die. And we've already gone over dead teeth. I don't think dead teeth are any more fun than dead people. So we need to not kill them. And so the more you do to teeth, the sooner they die. So my feeling is that if you can fix a tooth with anything but a crown, it should be fixed with anything but a crown. That an inlay, an onlay, all those things remove a lot less tooth. And the less tooth you remove, the less likely your tooth is to die. So my thought is that a focus on the material itself is probably misplaced. The focus really should be on the quality of the care, and that whatever material that you mutually choose to use should be one that requires the minimum removal of tooth and has the aesthetics that you want. And the ability of the dentist to use it. Porcelain, it's going to take two visits at least, because you got to prepare the tooth and then you got to take an impression, send it to the lab, then some weeks later it comes back from the lab. And so all of that time the tooth is covered with a temporary, and I don't think that's particularly good for teeth either. So the things that you can do in a short amount of time are going to be better than the things you do in a long amount of time. I think that's a, that's what I would tell your listener, is that zirconia is fine, but you know, if you can avoid using it at all, do.
Okay, great, thank you. What about in one of the videos that I watched, you're talking about kidney problems and the all the people who have kidney problems that were presumably caused by fluoride.
Well, yes and no. Mercury is very bad on kidneys. But once your kidney is injured, the fluoride accumulates in you. So it may not have been caused by the fluoride, but if your kidneys aren't, if you were exposed to, you know, 10 micrograms of fluoride right now, and you got good kidneys, within the next 24 hours, you're going to excrete about half of that. And then the other five are going to get stuck in your bones, probably more or less for the rest of your life. And that's why the bone issue, where you develop arthritis and you get weak bones and you have fractures and so forth, and that is definitely associated with basically your exposure to fluoride in the drinking water system. And that... So all sources of fluoride exposure are bad for you, but the one that's nearly impossible to avoid is the one when they put it in water, because you go to your favorite restaurant and the waiter's bringing a nice glass of water with ice cubes and a slice of lemon. Well, that's got fluoride in it. Well, we filter it. Oh, yeah? What filter do you run it through? Oh, I don't know, something we get at Home Depot. Go look at it. It's carbon. Yeah, it tastes good. Took the chlorine out. But it didn't take the fluorine out, because fluorine is not attracted to carbon. So unless they're making a very special effort to get rid of that, every coffee shop, bowl of soup that you have, water at your table at the $100 plate restaurant, unless you order the $10 bottle of water, is going to have fluoride in it. So it's an insidious program of destroying the country. And I'm sure that wasn't their intention, but it's the result, so they need to stop doing it. But in order to do that, they would have to admit they were wrong, and they're not going to do that, because that means that people would probably be angry with them, so they're not going to tell you that they were wrong. You know how life is, but that's my answer to that question. I think.
It's also in the wine that people drink, or the reconstituted orange juice, or anything that you buy at the store that has water in it is fluoridated.
In a bottle, a box, or a can. You're absolutely correct. You buy it at the store. Wheaties is 10 parts per million. Well, why? It's made in Battle Creek, Michigan. You know, fluoridated water. Is anything that you concentrate, you know, you make cereals by taking grains and then crunching them up and turning them into little flakes and putting sugar on them. That concentrates the fluoride in it because then you dehydrate it and the fluoride stays in the cereal. So you end up with high levels in breakfast cereals and, anything that's instant is going to be probably a concentration of noxy stuff that you don't want to have in your mouth. That's a sad story, but true. So if you're going to eat, you mentioned wines, and that which is absolutely correct. And there was a study done where they measured lots of different wines and several different, exactly the same flavor from the same vintner. And that what it was that it varied widely, and I think it was Gallo that they had the most measures in, but in some were low and some were high, and it was the same flavor. So how come that was? Because, well, that's, you know, those planes with the two wings, when they fly over, they're spraying fluoride. So if that particular batch of grapes came from the area that was low, then it's low. So how would you avoid that if you still wanted to drink a glass of wine? So you can drink organic wine. So organic wine, by definition, they don't use pesticides on that, so that'll be a good wine. Or maybe you're not a zero tolerance kind of person. You say, well, I can tolerate some fluoride, I can tolerate some pesticides. So that's the European approach. So if you get wine out of in Europe, that a half a part per million is the maximum level of all pesticides combined in wines that are sold in Europe. The ones that don't qualify under that, they sell to the U.S. market, because the U.S. market doesn't have any standards for pesticides in our wine. So it's a pig and a poke, but if you want to see where else, you said that at one time they were using fluoride as to kill rodents and coyotes and all kinds of animals, and that I can walk across the street. There's a, down the street a little ways, there's a house that was sold recently. And then in California, whenever a house is sold, they put a tent over it and they fumigate it to get rid of the termites, because it's nice warm here and we have lots of termites.
Oh, sure.
And so if you go to that house and you look on there, there's a placard that says, caution, this house has been fumigated and it contains sulfural fluoride. So the sulfural fluoride is how they kill termites. And that if you buy Mexican organic rutabagas, they bring them into a warehouse here in San Diego or wherever the port of entry is, and they fumigate it with sulfural fluoride. And that leaves a residue. You know how when you fumigate your house, they tell you to take all your food out? Don't leave any food in the house because, you know, it's going to end up with sulfuryl fluoride in it. Well, what happens if you put your organic food in a warehouse in San Diego and they pressurize it with sulfuryl fluoride? There'll be sulfuryl fluoride in the food. You betcha. So organic grown in this country, you have to add to that organic.
Right.
Choice on food. So, myself and five other scientists co-authored an article on the really, really high infant mortality in this country. And this country has one of the highest infant mortalities of any country.
Which is so terrible.
It's crime. It's ongoing in our time. And until the public becomes aware and says stop, then they will continue. But we're damaging children. We're damaging children with vaccines on the day of birth. There's no reason to vaccinate a child on the day of birth.
Or any time.
Well, vaccine, there are reasons for vaccinations. But, you know, the day of birth is not a good reason. There are things that vaccines can prevent. And then there's things that, you know, like Who cares? I had measles. Didn't bother, made me itch a little bit, but you know, it's a big deal. It's, you know, so let's get all worried about, you know, whether you get itchy or not. You know, but, you know, let's worry about big things. But
sure,
there's lots of evidence that, you know, we're grossly overdosing the child with fluoride. Is that I can show you the numbers. If you look at the dental fluorosis rate, it's gone up to 50% some areas. Well, dental fluorosis only occurs if you overdose a child during development of fluoride. So, you know, if you got half the kids with that problem, then you're overdosing half the kids with fluoride. And the other half of the kids, their mothers buy bottled water and put it in their lunchbox to take to school. So, you know, it's a very serious problem that is not being addressed, because it would mean that the sellers of fluoride would probably have to, you know, find some market for their deadly product, and they don't want to do that. They've got the Americans all talked into thinking it's a good idea, and so that'll work, and that's what they're doing. Lying to you again.
Imagine that.
How dare they?
Yes. I watched one video, talked about Alcoa aluminum, excuse me, and how who was behind Alcoa aluminum, and how all of this, the smoke, the fumes, were spreading into the adjacent communities and was making so many people sick. But because of the investors in Alcoa, then it was okay. They got away with it. Do you know which video I'm talking about?
I do, and I agree. But on the other hand, those damned hippies got that EPA thing passed back in the 70s. So that the chimneys on Alcoa that used to spew huge amounts of effluent had to quit, and that if you wanted to say that there was a silver lining in the cloud, it was the Alcoa now is a net consumer of fluoride, as opposed to just letting it leak out across the planet and making the neighbors sick and all that stuff. That they looked at the handwriting on the wall and they said, oh, okay, we're going to have to quit leaking so much fluoride. And so they actually end up reusing their fluoride in the smelting of aluminum. Almost any, all metals, whether it's aluminum or zinc or steel, I don't think mercury, but in those redox metals, when you smelt them, you release fluoride. That was in the book, The Fluoride Deception, talked about the deaths in the Donora, Pennsylvania.
Right, yes. That was
the 30s from, zinc smelters. It was a company town and the smelters were running 24 hours a day making zinc, and they, got a temperature inversion and held that chimney down against the ground and people died. Firemen are running around having to breathe oxygen, trying to save their lives. And they said, oh, no, it's just thick air, just real thick air. No, they died of fluoride poisoning. But there was a cover-up at that level by the United States government in the 30s. So it's not new that the government is in bed with the industry that generates hazardous material. And what is unfortunate is that we haven't been able to wrestle them down to confess that they have transgressed against their oath. We were talking earlier about the women, infant, and children, and that you look at what the only people who would actually talk to Doug Crago were in Mississippi, and he called her up and asked her. You know, everybody said no, they're not teaching, but he called and he talked to the lady in Mississippi and said, well, why aren't you? And she said, well, I have to get back to you on that. And so, and she did get back. And she got back and she said, well, the reason we're not telling him not to use fluoridated water is because it would be harmful to the fluoridation program. Okay, now here we got a lady that's making a nice government salary, and she has a sworn oath to uphold the laws of this country. And she has a job description of teaching mothers to feed their babies correctly to make healthy, strong, vital American citizens healthy and stronger. And she's decided to protect a policy instead of a baby. I think she needs to reread her job description, or we need to cut off the program and say, you know, you guys aren't doing it. And start another one where they tell them the truth. Regardless of whether it impugns the integrity of the dentists that are out there lying to you.
Right.
When the dentist tells you that mercury has been proven safe in fillings, I got news for him. It's actually been proven to harm dentists as well as their patients. The case-controlled studies showing kidney damage from putting mercury fillings in children's teeth, neurological impairment in boys, especially if they're CPOX 4. So, and the boys were harmed in a case-controlled study. CPOX 4, which is a very common genetic variant, it's not like they had hemophilia or something. This is not a sick child. This is an ordinary person that has a particular kind of genetic makeup, about 15% of the population. The boys with even just one filling were harmed in all five domains. That means there was no area of their brain that was not harmed.
Oh, my gosh. All
right. When they tell you that it's good, they're not telling you the truth.
That's for sure. All righty. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy, and his website, well, he's got Fluoride Gate. He has a YouTube channel. He's also on Facebook. He is the producer of Fluoride Gate and American Tragedy. All righty. We have had people, scientists, who have attempted to tell the truth, and they've suffered the consequences. William L. Marcus, who was an EPA scientist. Is that correct?
Your chief toxicologist, Office of Drinking Water.
Right. And what happened to him?
Well, he basically pointed out that Congress held a hearing in 1975 on fluoride after there was a study showing that there was a higher cancer rate, death rate, in fluoridated areas of the United States. Done by the former head of the National Cancer Institute Cytology Division, Dr. Dean Burke. And so Congressman Fountain convened hearings, and they heard from all the sides. And Craybill, who was the head of the National Cancer Institute, said, no, that Burke, he's a bad scientist. He only worked for the government for 30 years, and he's a bad scientist. He doesn't know what he's doing. He didn't adjust properly for this, that, one thing. And we have three studies that show that there's no increase at all in cancer death rates. That's just a spurious result. There's no reason to worry. Nothing to see here. Everybody should be calm. And Congressman Fountain said, well, Dr. Burke, what do you have to say to that? And he said, well, I've never seen the studies that Dr. Craybill says he has, because they're not in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. They haven't been published. That there's no way for other scientists to examine this work. And he said, well, if I got them for you, would you look at them, Dr. Burke? And he said, sure, I'd be glad to take a look at them. And so the weekend expired, and the hearing convened again. And instead of calling Dr. Burke to report on that study, they called Craybill back, and they said, the last time we got here, you said there were three independent studies. Do you wish to change your testimony today? No, those are three completely independent studies. And he said, you know, you're under oath, and you're testifying to Congress. Are you sure you don't want to change your testimony? He said, no, I'm testimony is correct. There's three independent studies, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, add this column of figures up here, please. And he added a column of figures, and he came up with the correct figure for cancer death rates in those three different studies, because there was a mathematical error in all three of the studies. It was the same mathematical error where they had inadvertently left out 105 cancer death rates, cancer deaths, which lowered the cancer death rate. When you put the actual numbers from the Census Bureau in, it did show that now they had four studies. Dr. Burke's study, and all three of the studies, one from Harvard, one from Oxford, and one from the NCI, showing increased cancer death rates. Four studies. And that's when they ordered the National Toxicologic Program to test fluoride. And we'll get back to that in a second.
All righty. We'll be right back. Stop the hour. Stay with us.
Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. He is the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. Please visit fluoridegate.org. He also has a YouTube channel, and he has a Facebook page, and he's featured in a lot of videos. Now, for some good links for today's program, please visit our chat room, spingola.chatango.com. You'll find lots of good links there for what we are talking about. All righty. Oh, okay. Go ahead and finish up talking to us about
about Bill Marcus getting fired over the
right.
His pointing out the if the congressman found then ordered the National Toxicological Program to begin to study fluoride as a carcinogen. And if you can believe, 1975 had been in the water for 25, 30 years. They had never, ever subjected it to even the most rudimentary examination. So because they weren't looking, they could say we didn't have any evidence. And so they said, well, let's look. And they looked, and that the high-dose animals were awash with disease and cancer of the lip, tongue, throat, liver, and bone. And that
wow.
So the same people that were lying to us before took that study and they changed every single cancer. So you need those people for a doctor. If you ever go to the hospital and hear you got cancer, get them to get a hold of it, because every cancer went away. It was those are the healthiest darn rats you ever did see. They modified every single finding in the study.
My
and Bill
gosh.
Marcus said that's not appropriate. And he pointed out the ADA said that the high-dose animals were overdosed. They had 79 parts per million fluoride in the drinking water. And Bill pointed out that when you analyze the rat, it actually had less fluoride in its bones than do humans living in fluoridated communities. And he said it's the first time in his history at the EPA, and he was there at the beginning, that he's ever seen anybody test a carcinogen at a lower level than what humans are exposed to. And he wrote a nice memo to that effect, and that the other thing they used was a phony baloney thing where they talk historic controls, and they said, oh, the controls get cancer, so we can just ignore cancers at this level. And that's only partially true. The controls get cancer if they got fluoride in their diet, but if you look at the no fluoride diet, those animals had the lowest cancer rate. So there's really no reason to raise the floor of the study. And that shows that Americans are suffering from an enormous number of cancers due solely to water fluoridation. And that's basically what they said was, we can't have that kind of stuff around here. It'll damage our policy. So they fired him. And he did a whistleblower lawsuit, and he won. Every single witness testified that they were witness tampered. You know how we hear all the stuff today about, obstruction of justice? witness tampering is obstruction of justice. And the Environmental Protection Agency and the Justice Department engaged in that wholesale obstruction of justice, trying to convict Dr. Marcus of being a bad scientist when he's not. He's a good scientist. And so the judge caught him at it. Dr. Marcus had his time cards. They claimed that Dr. Marcus was doing outside work on government time, and they produced time cards to show that. And Dr. Marcus was the guy that got lead out of the water supply. So people have been asked for Dr. Marcus for a long time. So he had copies of his time card. Do you have a copy of your time card? He had copies of his. And what the government had furnished him were forgeries.
That's wow.
Another crime. And so the judge asked to see the original copies because they'd given him the original time cards. And then the young man showed up and no briefcase. And he said, where are my original copies of Dr. Marcus's time cards? And he said, Your Honor, they were accidentally shredded last night.
Oh.
That's obstruction of justice extraordinaire, because the judge had already asked to see the time cards. Well, there's not too much he could do, so he banged the gavel one more time, and he gave Dr. Marcus punitive damages against the Justice Department and the EPA. So that's where it stands right now. The fluoride is a horrible carcinogen. The NTP study showed that it was. Dr. Marcus pointed out that the changes to the thing were not appropriate, and so they fired him. And he got his job back, and then they harassed him. He sued him again. He won again, and then he got old and retired. He's in my fluoride gate movie. But he's an honest American, and he will tell you exactly what he thinks. Fluoride is a carcinogen, and it should be treated as such.
Right.
Just as simple as that. So that's their...
What a shame.
Well, you know, how do they get away with that? Is it people will put up with that kind of behavior? That's not appropriate. They shouldn't be putting up with that kind of behavior, but they do.
Right. So,
you know, it's like, you know, you say I'm in lots of movies. It's, why do I do that? It's, I'm an American. If you sit back and relax and let evil forces take over your country, you deserve the country you get. But this country was founded by patriots who stand up against evil, and we say no to people that want to force chemicals in our water supply and insist that we vaccinate our children with mercury. That's something you have to stand up against. Or if you don't, then you should take your American flag pin off your lapel and throw it in the trash, because that's what you're doing to your country. If you let evil forces damage your children, damage your country, you can't be considered a patriot, I can tell you that for sure. But then I have a lot of people that I don't consider patriots are walking around with an American flag pin in their lapel. I guess that doesn't make you a patriot, does it?
Right. Oh, gosh. All righty. We do have some callers. We will take calls at 800-313-9443. And we have Tom in Utah. Tom, welcome.
Hi, David. This is Tom Rogers in Utah. I'll give you a second to scratch the gray matter. Jeff Green, Keepers of the Well, Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. Well, pretty miserable as a whistleblower.
There you go. Doesn't work, does it?
No good deed goes unpunished.
That's what I say.
By the way, I just wanted to remind you that Jeff Green came upon me when I was asked to go down to Santa Monica and help them interfere with the fluoridation of Santa Monica. And also, I've also over that period of time kept six cities from fluoridating. But I wanted to remind the listeners that the primary victim in fluoridating your water, the human has fairly efficient halide pumps in their skin, so they can dispose of these halide salts fairly easily compared to your pet or your fish or your bird. In fact, in 1959, as soon as I came out of high school, I enrolled in the university and I went into veterinary and human pathology, and I ended up working for a period with a Dr. White down in central Utah. And at that time, we were dealing with fluorosis in cattle. I don't know if anybody realizes it takes 50,000 gallons of water running through a cow to hydrate a cow through its life. And since fluoride is lipophilic, that means everybody speaks Latin, right?
Yeah, right.
Lipo means fat, and philic means friendly or attractive. So when you're fluoridating the environment like United States Steel was doing, like you say, and like all of my documents provide, every smelting process presents a byproduct or waste product of a fluorine compound. So at the time when I started, you know, studying medicine, I was working down with Dr. White in American Fork, Utah, and we were trying to determine why these cattle were failing with fluorosis. We finally identified the source, and that was the smokestacks of U.S. Steel. With that information, we developed, you know, discovery and disclosure, went to the legislature as well as to the Department of Environmental Sciences, all of that. And we finally got scrubbers installed on the steel mill. But the fact is, anytime you smelter anything from the earth, since fluorine is a dominant element in the earth, even though it's mostly harmless as calcium fluoride, right? But anytime you crack any ore, you're going to have fluorine as a byproduct. But anyway, this, with all the papers that I developed, along with Dr. White and others, including those of UC Berkeley, UC Davis, UC San Diego, and Riverside, we were working on the fluoride problem relative to agricultural products and livestock. And the most concentrated source of fluoride is the animal. So, by the way, you know, David, I'm a vegan, hardcore vegan. That's because I don't want any fluoride from the hamburger that I would have eaten. But anyway, with that information, I was able to keep fluoride out of Santa Monica. It was rather curious, and Jeff was kind of sitting there in awe as I explained to the wives of the councilmen that their dog, their cat, their pets, and the fauna of Santa Monica would be the victims primarily, because if they fluoridated in Santa Monica, they would lose their dogs to kidney failure and the like, and cancers, because a dog drinks copious amounts of water, and it doesn't sweat it out, so it has to breathe it out through its lungs. Some goes out through its kidneys. But that fluoride accumulates in the tissues of the dog, and that accumulates at a faster rate than it would with a human, because a human has the halide or sweat pumps. So I was trying to encourage Jeff and you when you were up here in Layton, Utah, and also down in Phoenix. We were together. I don't know if you remember.
Sure.
I said, also use the argument on the livestock. And every community that had livestock as a primary source of income, where they asked me to come and discuss it, like White City or Twilly, Utah, or Woods Cross, Utah, even some of the communities there in California, close to you and close to Jeff. By the way, I miss Jeff. I used the animal studies problem, and that was far more concerning to the people who ran livestock, because they didn't want to lose the thousands of dollars a single cow is worth. So
money.
If you want the canary in the mine, you look at the animals, and they are the representative of the disease that can affect you over time. Anyway, I didn't mean to go on this little lecture, but I am so glad. I walked in, I heard David Kennedy on the air. I said, oh, there's my friend.
And he's out there again. You know, I thank you for doing what you could in Santa Monica, but you know what happened after that?
Yeah, Richard Holbrook
came in and paid them money and rubbed their back, and now that Santa Monica's got fluoride in the water supply. So,
yeah, that's Dr. Holbrook, the chair of dentistry at UCLA. Thank you.
And there is a $100 million a year program run by the Center for Disease Control. 35 dentists and hygienists at the Center for Disease Control make well over that in salaries and budgets to come out and lie to the American public. I can help them balance that budget there in Washington, D.C. They can immediately take all the money that's being wasted on adding silicon fluoride to the public water supply and take that money and turn it around and use it to teach hygiene in kindergarten, and they'll have a lot better oral health. And how do I know that? Because that's what Denmark does. That's what Sweden does. That's what other countries do. They teach the kiddies to brush their teeth, and then they teach them that sugar's not all that good for them to eat. Our country, our trade associations are in bed with the sugar industry, and they never say a word bad about sugar, but, oh, we got to put fluoride in water, kids' teeth will rot. Kids' teeth will rot if they eat sugar. And if you go into any museum, I don't care, any museum in Utah or California, anywhere, and look at Native Americans that lived thousands of years ago, there are no cavities. None. And so what happened now? If you go to a reservation today, there are cavities all over the place, and diabetes too. And we fixed their cavities with mercury.
By the way, I don't know if you've looked at my website, you know, like I've got to tell you, there are a few good people in the CDC, but they're not the men. I prevailed upon the women who I'd worked with over the decades. I said, you've got to help me validate this other issue, a poisoning issue. So they did come together, and they put pressure on the CDC, and I got this poisoning issue that I exposed with the, you know, in that gassyamerica.com. So I got to give credit to the women of the CDC, a handful. But on the other hand, like you're saying, they're nothing more than the pig. I was going to use a bad word on the radio. They're the paid prostitutes of the industry. And as I was there in Atlanta and then again up in D.C., there would be the lobbyists following in through. They'd be in their fine suits. I'd be in my humble kind of cowboy dress, right, like us, like Jeff and I. And then after me would come these other characters, and they're the people who have the money to buy the legislators, and so these things are allowed to occur. Anyway, I'm just so glad you're on. Thank you for coming on and talking to Diana's crowd. And when you get a chance, go to gassingamerica.com and call me. I need to find out what we are going to do with citizensforsafedrinking.org since Jeff has left and gone to that unfluoridated pasture in the sky.
Yes.
By the way, one other comment. If you go into the agricultural law, the cities that have large livestock operations are not permitted to fluoridate their water. Isn't that curious?
Yeah, Kansas City's fluoridated.
Well, Kansas City's not producing livestock. They're simply packing it.
Oh, I see.
It's where the agricultural, it's in the ranching areas, in the livestock production areas is where they're not allowed to fluoridate the water. Because a fluoridated cow is $1,000 or $2,000 loss.
You know, I did a movie called Poisoned Horses. And I don't know if you've seen it. It's on my YouTube channel. It's David Kennedy DDS. But the guy that helped the Mohawk Indians win the first lawsuit against Alcoa was Leonard Crook. He's a professor of veterinary pathology at Cornell. And that Kathy Justice's horses got sick and one died. And that she managed to talk to Jeff Green, and Jeff Green got her in touch with Leonard Crook. And Leonard said, well, you have to look at the bone. And he said, did you have a bone? And they said, no, the vets didn't take any bones. He says, well, I need a bone. And so Dad had to get the backhoe out and dig up the horse and sent the cannon bone. And it's in a scientific study he published before he passed away. That animal was definitely fluoride poisoned from drinking municipal tap water. And you're absolutely correct. What you say is that animals And, you know, and the other one that ends up injured is the cat. The kidneys of the cat fail because they're feeding the tap water. So, Kathy lost four horses.
All animals have the disadvantage of not being able to sweat out their poisons like we can. But that doesn't mean we should pass them through our body just because we can get rid of them easier. This means we're a little bit slower in expressing the clinical damage.
There never was any reason to put fluoride in the water of any community, and there's even less reason to put it in the livestock's water, but we end up doing it to the whole planet because, you know, they're even fluoridating the water in Brazil and Colombia, and you go ask those people why, is it recommended by the Americans?
Terrible.
What else?
So we not only poison ourselves, we poison everybody.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Tom. We're going to a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Dr. David Kennedy. And you'll want to visit Fluoride Gate. And he has a YouTube channel, Facebook. He is the producer of Fluoride Gate, an American tragedy. The thing that really bothers me and should bother everybody, I think, is the fact that these entities that want to get rid of their waste, put it in our water, and yet that is. They're doing it without our consent, without our the knowledge of what. If you go to a doctor, the doctor's not going to force you to take a prescription without telling you what the side effects might be or the effects might be. He's not going to force you to do this. But when they just put this widespread in all of these community water supplies, they are medicating people without their consent. But what if they just decide that everybody has to have some other thing, Prozac or some other thing? Are they going to add that to the water also?
Well, there's talk about adding lithium to the water. So, but the difference between lithium and fluoride is lithium's an approved drug for certain neurological conditions, not everybody. And fluoride has never been approved to be ingested by the FDA, ever. So they're putting an unapproved drug in the drinking water, which might give somebody pause. And if you look at the dose, the infant is given a dose that is well above the dose that the National Academies of Science determined would cause harm. And one of those things is dental fluorosis. And like I said, we got half the kids with dental fluorosis. So it's not like it's not happening. It's not theoretical. It's causing harm to our country. And the reason that, like Santa Monica is now fluoridated, Los Angeles is fluoridated, lobbyists show up at our elected officials, hand them lots of money, and then they do what the lobbyist wants them to do. And who's lobbying them to put fluoride in the water in California? That would be the California Dental Association. And where do they get the money to give the legislators? Well, they say they get it from their members. But it's actually money laundering, is that they get money from industry in the form of a seal of approval, donations to their nonprofit, contributions from industry. And then if they have a convention, they charge an enormous amount of money to even be able to display their products at the meeting, so they make a ton of money off of the industry. And they use a little bit of that to go buy our politicians, since politicians are a lot less costly than silicon fluoride. So,
sure.
Anyway, it's an ongoing policy that the government has adopted in this country to promote fluoridation, and that's where the problem is. Until the public elects people to office who will do what's right for us rather than what's best for their, what would you call a politician's fundraiser?
Scoundrels.
Their donors. So, anyway. Right. We're going to continue to have this problem, but you've got to vet your people when you elect them, and the, you know, they always want to say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist or this or that. No, I'm a scientist, and the dose of fluoride exceeds the dose that will harm an infant. Why is that okay with you?
Right. All righty. We do have another caller, Kathy in Missouri. Kathy?
Hi, I really appreciate your show today and your guest and the Tom from Utah. I love these kind of men, you know what I mean? But I hate to say at the end of this, I was married to one of these men. I'd probably be scared the whole time, like, oh my God, what's going to happen to us for his full voice, you know? And, that's a side of the coin that I've never heard discussed, you know what I mean, with some of the guests that are so brave and so bold. You know what I mean? It's like, how do their spouses react? Do they have their support? And I just thought that might be something fun, like, to cover sometime, but the reason I called is not that. It's regarding, have you ever heard, sir, of black floss made by Personal Oral Health, POH? Are you familiar with that product?
Okay, we'll have to hold that question over. Stay with us, both of you, and we'll be right back. We're back with Dr. David Kennedy, and we have Kathy in Missouri who had a question. Could you repeat your question, Kathy?
Sure, sir. I wondered if you, I use the product Black Floss by it's by POH Percept 420. It's the thinnest one that they make. And that floss is so thin, it's so strong, and it's hard to find retail, and I was told that they basically have, it's basically the best floss on the market, and it goes up so high that it will actually keep at bay, or even, I think some dentist watch will say that it will actually cure some periodontal issues. And so because you're talking about oral health, I just wanted to mention that. And I'm sure they are, you know, mainstream ADA and support the fluoridation, et cetera. So I don't want to, you know, merge those two subjects, but it is a very, very excellent floss, especially for people with, like I said, anyone, because it goes up so high because it's so thin and it's so strong that the periodontal issues, also tight teeth, people with tight teeth, they can't get that rope floss up there, right? So it helps prevent more decay. And I just am very impressed with it. All of my dentists now use that floss at home, and because I bring it in, I have a little sample of it. So anyway, one day maybe I can work for them. I probably should be, but I don't now. But I also had another, if I could ask one more question, or just make, those are comments more, but I have an oral antral fistula above a number 14 that was torn, and it should have been stitched, you know, the day they tore it, and they didn't. They're wanting to go in and kind of fix that now, and it's not leaking, and I'm like, who would you recommend I research to try to figure out, should I let them go in? You know what I mean? Intubate me and do all this repair if it isn't leaking now. Do you have any ideas?
Oral antral fistula. So you've got a drain out where the tooth number 14 was pulled. You've got a hole between your sinus and where the tooth came out.
When the tooth extracted, I started having water just pouring out my nostril. And there is on the panoramic they took about 6 weeks ago, there is a fistula. Yeah, the seam is visible, but it's probably begun filling in with soft tissue, right? It wasn't even packed, okay? I just went to sleep sitting up for 6 weeks. Bottom line, it was like a nightmare, okay? So I had 15 extracted, and I went to Kansas City and had that done, and they did pack and stitch that one that day, and it tore, and it didn't perforate the sinus, but and I didn't have any leakage from that one, but the 14 behind it was taken out in October. It's not leaking now, but if we do any more work, they want to go in and do that. And I'm just very naive about it, and I started researching it, and it's like it's a very deep subject, and I'm not a dentist. And I just wonder if you have any advice on where I might, you know, do my proper research or any wisdom I might glean.
I think you just need to tell the oral surgeon to fix it, but you don't want to be a general anesthetic. The reason they want to intubate you is because they're going to use a general anesthetic. You can do almost anything in the head and neck region with local anesthetic. So just say, I don't want a general. And, but it should be fixed because it will be more or less infected the rest of your life. It's not supposed to have an opening to your mouth. And that is what the problem is. And so they'll raise a flap and cover it up and seal it up.
So even if it is leaking.
There can't be an opening you can see on an x-ray and not have it leaking. You may not feel it, but it's just leaking.
I should be careful right now. I'm not drinking distilled water, but I'm drinking the cleanest water I can get where I live. So I would want to avoid, is there anything I should avoid? No one's given me any insight on this, but I was told I'm lucky he owned it. I had another doctor tell me that I'm lucky this oral surgeon owned the error.
Well, it's not even necessarily an error. Is it if you have an abscess too, the abscess is in the sinus, but you gotta get it fixed. So, what you put in your mouth will have very little effect on what happens to the sinus, because it's the germs that are in your sinus already, the germs that are in your mouth already, that are going to be able to communicate back and forth through that opening. And that's not good. But they can close that. That's a fairly routine kind of thing. They're not good, but they're fairly simple to fix. You just raise the flap and cover it over and seal it up.
My dentist sent me an email and he went through, there's about six different techniques to repair that. See, that does get a little bit more complicated. And I guess the same person that pulled that tooth and didn't, that should have been packed and stitched the day it was extracted, period. Okay. And that's what they did in Kansas City. It did tear. They stitched it and packed it intraorally. That day, they didn't let me go home with water coming out my nose and then tell me to sleep staying up for 6 weeks. So they did the right thing. So I really love the oral surgeon that I'm seeing as another one, but I guess I'm going to have to let him fix it. And yet I know he should have repaired it the day that it was, you know what I mean? This should not have ever happened, basically. It should have been stitched that day and it wasn't. And that makes trust a little bit of an issue. You know what I mean? And they do
Truth be told, is it just because you're a dentist doesn't mean you know how to fix an oral antral fistula. He's an oral surgeon.
They're both oral surgeons. So.
Well, okay. You have right to argue with him then and say, fix this sucker. Anyway.
No, he agreed to fix it, but they want to intubate me. And then, of course, trust is, of course, an issue because he's the one that should have kept it and stitched it the day he took it out and it tore. And they didn't do that. Therefore, but I'm limited. I don't really have any other options. So it's a terrible situation because no one else, it's expensive and no one really will take my insurance. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. So I'm basically putting it off.
He's going to fix it for you. So get back there because the delay just makes it harder.
And I'm difficult to intubate. Therefore, I want it done in office.
I would just tell him you don't want to be intubated. It's your choice. I've had lots of things done here and there, and I just tell him no fluoride. We didn't get into that, Diana, is that all of your general inhalation anesthetics are fluoride. And we have people that develop arthritis from the inhalation anesthetics. Just say, I don't want general anesthetic. I would like local.
I'm sorry to bring the socioeconomic stuff into this. I know everybody's cringing out there in the audience, but I'm poor and I'm on Medicaid for dental and we have no power. Speaking truth to power for me is a single female. Single females are always marginalized, but I've been type 1 diabetic since age 2. So I've gone up against the doctor crowd, the white mafia. I have pushed back against the mafia crowd. I could write a book on iatrogenesis, okay, just from my own personal experience. It's more of a miracle that I've survived the doctors and the errors they have made upon me than it is that I have perfect eyes and kidneys after type 1 diabetes for 53 years. I have no retinal damage. My kidneys are perfect. So I'm really, seriously, a trilogy on iatrogenesis. But I really love the oral surgeon down here. He did own the error. So I'm just as pray that I can basically get that done. But back to that floss, so you're going to thank me for that because you probably pulled it up online. Yeah.
It's good stuff. I've actually used Dr. Bass's brushes, which is the same place you get them at that POH for 50 years. So anyway, since he started making them. So that's the floss that you're using used to be Dr. Bass's wife's sewing thread. And he figured out that the way you get that, or button thread is what she called that, is that,
he
was looking for something to clean between her, clean his teeth, and, cause he, when he was 65, they said, oh, Dr. Bass, your teeth have to be pulled, you got gum disease. And he said, I don't want my teeth pulled. And they said, oh, you got to, cause it's gonna ruin your heart. And so he said, well, maybe I'll figure out what's causing it. He looked under a microscope, saw the spirochetes, and he went to work on them, and amoebas, and he got rid of them. And he did it with hygiene. So anybody, whether you're poor or rich, or you're a scientist with a microscope or not, if you do the adequate oral hygiene, you will get rid of the critters that are causing you to lose your teeth, and you can stop losing your teeth. That's why
absolutely.
Gotta save your teeth.
And the thing to remember, though, that I really stress is get the Percept 420. That is the thinnest one, and that will go up high. I had a cavity come up on a tooth on the right. Way at the top where that thick floss would not reach, and that had decay come up there, that root canal tooth failed, and that was, I had iatrogenesis, actinomycosis. It ended up 3 facial plastic surgeries after that ordeal. And I had iatrogenesis there, you know what I mean, no access to dental care, cash paying everybody. It didn't work well for me, okay? So I ended up having a
miscarriage. I got news for you. All root canals fail. So just say no.
Well, but that was a long time ago. That was 30 years ago. But when it failed right where that floss wouldn't reach. That's where the, you know what I mean? And I've been using that floss. I don't think that thing would have ever failed. It wouldn't have failed like it did, basically. It was due to decay because that floss wouldn't reach way up at the top of that tooth there. And my brushing probably could have been better. But nonetheless, I don't support root canal therapy either. Don't worry. I've learned that lesson. I am 55 now, so I'm not a child anymore. Thank you, though, very much for your time, and I'll let you get to your next caller. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
And bye-bye.
All righty. You mentioned the anesthetics that people use, doctors use to put you to sleep. Let's also talk about a little bit about the fluoride that is in other medications. We've already talked about it being in Wheaties and that kind of thing. But it's also in gummy bears and things that you would think, why would they put fluoride in gummy bears? But tell us a little bit about the anesthetic that people use to...
Fluoride is a neurotoxin. That's the one that, neuro, brain, toxin,
right,
bad for. And that if you want to knock somebody out... you give them fluoride in some form or another. And if you want to alter their behavior, you give them fluoride in some form or another. Prozac, Fen-Phen, Fenfluramine, I think even Rohypnol. All of those are fluorinated oral drugs. And then your inhalation anesthetics are a combination of the halogens, the fluorine and bromine. And those are, halothane, fluorothane. Those are all of those drugs, affect your brain. And so that, so you get, you're going to have your gizzard removed or something like that so that they knock you out with an anesthetic. And so you need to make the brain quit working, in a reversible fashion, hopefully. But general anesthetic is not benign. There's a study done that every general anesthetic procedure you have, you lose a few IQ points. And so rather than do that, just look and see what can be done without a general anesthetic. And you can do almost anything with a local anesthetic, a spinal anesthetic, and as long as it's not major surgery where you're not, taking the gizzard out or something. So I just encourage everybody to, say no to the general anesthetics because they are not benign. They're going to harm you. So anyway, that's the story on anesthetics, but it's a shame that, more doctors don't know that. I had an anesthesiologist argue with me and said, it never harms anybody.
Gosh.
I said, well, how about the study of the 2 IQ points lost? And he said, well, they didn't have the adequate controls. I said, you have a study that didn't find an IQ loss? No.
Right.
Oh, okay. So you don't like their results, huh?
Well, right.
They can always come up with some criticism. And that's the thing about dentists. is Dennis think criticizing somebody else's work is the same as doing the work, and it's not. It just means that blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't like their result. That's not the same. And so, you know, there's lots of studies. And, you know, truth be told, all dentists are mercury poisoned. And I'll say that again. All dentists are mercury poisoned. And how can I say that with such confidence? Is that the scientific literature is completely full of studies of dentists and dental personnel and dental schools and dental offices, and the exposure levels exceed the level that the occupational health and safety will allow a worker to be exposed to.
Oh.
And so, you know, these are gross numbers. They're huge numbers, like over 1,000 parts per million. The minute you put your drill on a tooth, you're getting in the 500s with a rubber cup on the tooth, polishing the fillings. So your hygienist actually has one of the highest blood levels of mercury in the dental office. But no, it even starts before that. In dental school, they go into a technique lab, a sophomore lab, where you do work and you handle mercury, and they get exposed there with no ventilation, no protection, no measurement. I bothered Janet Napolitano about using OSHA standards on students. And she came back with, well, how do I know that? And I said, well, because I measured the level of mercury in UCLA. And they said, okay, we'll ask UCLA. A year and a half later, UCLA got back and said, yeah, we're perfectly within OSHA standards. Well, it's a school. They can't use OSHA standards on students. So I pointed that out to them, and they said, we're not going to talk to you anymore. So I took their letter and I sent it to every OSHA general manager throughout the state of California, and Ken Gerlich replied, and he said, got your letter? No, students are not covered by OSHA unless they are employed by the university. They are covered and protected by the Environmental Protection Agency standards, which in California is 0.3 parts per million mercury in the ambient air for a 24-hour day. Okay, that's really good. Are they in compliance with that? No. And so how come they get to do it? Is it the people who are supposed to be protecting them, they've been given the responsibility of making sure that your children going to school don't get harmed, are ignoring the law? So I don't know how to make that go away.
Wow.
Except talk on your radio program, and maybe some law enforcement person will go after the UCLA and you don't have to go to UCLA. You can go to every dental school in the United States. Every dental school in the United States breaks the law. Go to the sophomore lab. Go there when the students are learning to use amalgam and measure the air. It's not 0.3, I can tell you that.
Wow.
And then arrest the professor.
Sure.
That's the thing. If I took a hammer and hit you in the side of the head, that is a traumatic event. And it's called a tort. It's the same as a fight in a bar fight.
Right.
A tort. And so the professor in the dental school is guilty of what's called a toxic tort. That professor that's allowing those students to be exposed to mercury is guilty of injuring those students with mercury. And why do I say injury? Because above a 50 parts per million in California is immediately hazardous to health. There's a flea the area. It's called a permissible exposure limit. That when you open the amalgam capsule, when you've made a new filling, that the area of the breathing area of the person opening the capsule exceeds the level that is the flea and return in a spacesuit level. And it's called a permissible exposure limit. So they're breaking the law.
They are. We'll be right back. We'll take Dr. Kelly when we get back. Our guest has been Dr. David Kennedy, the author of How to Save Your Teeth, Toxic-Free Preventative Dentistry. We do have one last caller. We just have a few minutes. Dr. Kelly, Northern California.
Thank you for taking my call. It's always great to hear the interesting variety of wisdom and knowledge that you share on your show, and I wanted to thank you for that, and thank you for your guest. And one discovery that I made is in the Merck Index of Biologicals, Pharmaceuticals, and Botanicals, the albumin from egg whites is one of the antidotes to mercury toxicity.
How are we doing? Orally or what?
Acute
exposure?
By consuming the egg whites, you know, on an every other daily basis so that you don't build up a tolerance to the protein, it serves as an antidote to mercury toxicity, and I'm glad to share something new, and thank you again for all of the wisdom and knowledge, and when Spingola speaks, we should be listening.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Sam Queen wrote the book on intravenous vitamin C chelation. And that Sam was a medical technologist, and he became mercury poisoned, and that he said he recovered from his injury years ago, back before some of the Boyd Haley invented his new product that sucks up mercury like a sponge. But anyway, he ate, I think, a dozen eggs a day. So yeah, he was on the egg diet, and that that helped him recover from mercury poisoning. So you're absolutely correct that there is a... And, you know, that even the albumin in your blood, you have albumin in your bloodstream, which is a carrier of various hormones. And it, Boyd Haley's product is carried in that. And also it'll carry mercury around. So your body will help you out and try to kill you. So thanks very much.
Yes, thank you. Well, that is interesting. Now, you mentioned Dr. Haley's product. What is the name of that product?
It's Emeramide, E-M-E-R-A-M-I-D-E, and it was it's a half a piece of sugar with two arms that and it's made out of a protein, amino acid called cysteine, and so the end of the arms contain sulfur, and then he positioned them in just such a way that the arms are the right distance apart for mercury, and you can murder a rat with mercury and then give them the stuff, and the rat jumps up and says, "What are you doing?" It really stops mercury poisoning instantly. And it was on the market for 2 years, 2 million doses, and then the FDA took it off because the autistic children were recovering, and that makes them look really bad.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it's now back. It's back as an experimental, in what's it called, an investigative new drug. You can get it... early access in lots of countries. The United States is probably the last one to get it, but it's available in New Zealand and Austria and many other countries. The U.S., you have to have an institutional review board, which will cost you some money. So, but they're not trying to make it easy because it's going to knock out a whole bunch of drugs because there's a lot of stuff that were people taking drugs for that really is mercury. We talked about the dentist with all the schizophrenia and the motor and the depression and all that stuff. What if all of those were related more to mercury than they are to anything else? All of a sudden,
they probably are.
I would say the fact that they seem to go away when you give people a chelator for mercury might indicate that mercury is causing a whole lot of problems that most people don't recognize, and that... there was a Supreme Court ruling recently in Norway that the dental assistants, and this is how we're going to have to stop it. The last 2 minutes, I'm going to tell you how to stop the problem. Is any dental assistant or dentist working for somebody else who isn't walking around in a spacesuit every time they use any mercury, then you need to file a complaint with Occupational Health and Safety. The rules are you have to have informed consent and protective equipment, and they got to measure when you're exposed to mercury. So if they're not walking around measuring, giving you a space suit and a respirator, they're breaking the law. So complain about it, and they'll have to comply. But the OSHA won't comply, won't check on their own. It's got to be an employee in that office complaining, and that's still working there. You can't quit and complain either. You got to be there.
Wow.
What do you think of that idea?
Very interesting.
I don't know. They seem to fall into a coma because they're mercury poisoned.
I believe that.
Yeah. Getting dentists to do anything is kind of like pulling teeth.
Right. I gave a local dentist a video about fluoride, and he just kind of tossed it aside. I know he never watched it.
Because his brain is fried. He was poisoned in school, and he's poisoning himself still.
Right. Well, thank you so very much for being on the program today. I loved it.
Thank you for having me, and we'll keep talking about the good things.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye, listeners.